the Reformation and the Civil War. Okay, so we are now moving on into the beginnings of what we call modern society. Now, historians are very traditional people, so when we say modern society, we mean the 17th and 18th and 19th century. We're very old-fashioned people. The Reformation and the Civil War. Okay, so the Reformation, the process of the invention of Protestantism. The result is that Britain today, still today, is a Protestant country. The majority is the Church of England, the Church of Scotland, and the Catholics are a minority. About 10% of the British are Catholics today. And this, the Reformation, then, this big split, really, in the Church, was a very important event because the Church was so powerful in the Middle Ages that it's much more important than the situation today where religion is something you do on a Friday or on a Sunday for many, many people, or not at all. At this time, everybody is religious. Yeah? You don't have any atheists. Religion is really at the centre of their worldview. We're looking at the period from 1500 to 1650, approximately. This is the time of Henry VIII, and then Edward, Mary, Elizabeth, and then the king whose head is cut off in the Civil War, Charles I. So, let's begin with how important the church was. Yes? Yeah. Well, they're easy to find on the internet. No, I don't think I'll repeat them. The church is absolutely central to society. The church is extremely rich. Many towns belong to the church. It's like a big multinational corporation in some way. The church has its own courts, its own tribunals. Many questions, for example, about wills, les testaments, are not decided by the king's tribunals, they are decided by the church tribunals. So in some ways, the church is like a parallel state, c'est un peu comme un état parallèle. Yeah? It's not clear who has more power, the king or the church. Yeah, very, very, very powerful. Of course, in general, the king and the church work together, but not always, as we will see. The church is also almost like a mass media. Everybody goes to church on Sunday. Where do you get information about the world? The priest explains to you, you know, what is good, what is bad, what is happening in the world. Yeah. When the king or the pope wants to get a message out to millions of people, they send it to the churches and it's announced in church. It's like the mass media, of course. No radio, no television. Newspapers, very, very... no newspapers, in fact. Yeah, the first newspapers are in the 18th century. No newspapers. What do you have? Very little information, a lot of rumours and myths. And the church is very important like that. And finally, everybody accepts that the church is... It's normal and natural that the church should be at the centre of society. Remember, I showed you the cathedrals and the ordinary people from the villages and the towns. They look at these cathedrals and they see a very, very powerful organization. However, there are divisions inside the church, and before the Reformation, there are also many reforms. Yeah, and now in French, this is a little bit more difficult because in French you say la réforme avec un R majuscule pour le grand événement dont on parle, et les réformes avec un R minuscule pour des réformes. Alors, il y avait des réformes pendant des siècles avant la réforme. La réforme, the Reformation, is a huge crisis in the church. And what causes this crisis? Well, there have always been criticisms of the church and protests and demands for change. But at this period, the demands for change in the church correspond with a demand for change in society. And in particular, in Germany, the merchant classes are very unhappy with the traditional church because the church does a lot of trade and does not pay tax, for example. It's unfair competition. The church has a monopoly on many important positions in society. And the new merchant classes in Germany, when Protestantism comes along for another reason, the merchant classes in Germany say, yes, this is a good idea. And it's also a kind of ideology which corresponds to the new society. Protestantism is more about individuals and more about dynamism. It's much better for capitalism than the old Catholic hierarchy, nothing changes sort of attitude. Right. So, what happens? Well, it all begins in Germany. This is Martin Luther. Martin Luther, who is the hero of the Protestants. Remember, when I talk about the Protestants, there are many different kinds of Protestants. They all have something in common at this time. They all reject the idea that the Pope is the direct descendant of Saint Peter, and when the Pope speaks, it is the voice of God. This is the traditional Catholic idea, even today, yeah, that the Pope is always right because he was chosen by God to be the descendant of Saint Peter. Yeah, good job, if you can get it. Good pay. No, the pay is not so good, but the condition de retraite, very good. Yeah, the retirement is excellent. Paradise, you know, and all that. Yes, that's right. Yeah, retirement benefits, yes. Okay, so they have something in common. They reject the Catholic Church, but they have a lot of differences. Some of them believe in predestination. God has already chosen who is saved. You will be saved. You will go to hell. Sorry. Yeah. But not all Protestants, just some. Other Protestants emphasize different things. Okay, but we will look at some of that in a moment. So Martin Luther wanted reforms in the church. This was not new. There had been many movements for reforms. And sometimes there had been revolts as well. I think I mentioned to you the Cathars in France. There were the people in Bohemia. Today it's Czechoslovakia around Hussites. They all demanded big changes, and mostly they were executed or things like that, you know. What was different about Martin Luther was not, the demands were not very different. The difference was he won. That was the big difference, he won. Yeah, that he managed to found a new church, which was independent of Rome, and which had a great future to it. He began by denouncing corruption in the church. And corruption was very important. There had been some attempts to reduce corruption. Corruption was, you know, would you like to be bishop? Oh, well, you know, give me £100,000 and I'll make you bishop and not him. You know, it was real corruption. You know, buying church positions. This is the technical term for this is simony. Yeah, this is buying church positions. Yeah. Also, relics. Relics. You know. Would you like to buy a bit of the real cross which Jesus was crucified on? Only £1,000. It's for you. It's real. I promise. And this was a very general habit to sell relics and to make a lot of money. And finally, indulgences. 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 Indulgences, that's very good. Perhaps you remember, according to Catholic ideology, when you die, you don't go directly to heaven or hell. You spend some time in purgatory. Now, if you've been a good girl, you only spend a little time in purgatory. And if you've not been such a good girl, it's a long time. But I have here... It's a sort of transit zone. Yes, it's like an airport, yeah. Okay, but I have here a piece of paper which says... 100 years less in purgatory. And if you give me a lot of money, I will give you this. This is an indulgence. It will reduce your time in purgatory. Donc, pour réduire le temps que vous allez passer à brûler, généralement, dans un endroit pas cool, yeah? You can buy this indulgence. This was very common. This was big money. This was a big business. People really believed it. And so it seems a little ridiculous to us today. And Martin Luther said, this is not right. Yeah, this is not right. We do not want this. And there he is. That's him again. You can see, in this case, it's a statue. He is obviously somebody's hero. And here you have the situation in 1560. Malheureusement, je n'arrive pas à lire la légende. Il est clair que le... les différentes couleurs, c'est le protestantisme qui avance, les différents types de protestantisme qui avancent, mais je n'arrive pas à lire le détail. Okay. In Scotland, here is the leader of the Reformation in Scotland, John Knox. Okay, so what were they doing, these different Protestants? Well, the first thing they were doing, as I mentioned, the first thing they were doing was protesting against corruption and against things like selling indulgences, which didn't seem to them to be very Christian. Secondly, they had new ideas about theology. Theology, the study of God. Yeah, the theology. They had new ideas of theology. Now, for example, Luther said, it's wrong to worship saints. You should only pray to God and not to the saints. You know, St. Thomas, St. Catherine, St. David, St. all the different saints. Now, the saints were very important to the church. You had to, even when I was young, my mother would pray to one saint if she'd lost something, and another saint if somebody was sick. You know, the saints are like specialized, you know, specialized saints. And Luther said, no, this is not good Christianity. It's not in the Bible. Which is true, it's not in the Bible. That's one example. Another example, Calvin, who was another of the leaders, not Luther and Calvin were the two big leaders of the Reformation in Europe. Calvin became very popular and influential in Switzerland, and Luther in Germany. Calvin had a new idea about the communion. If you are Catholic, or if you know some Catholics, you know every Sunday you eat a bit of bread, and according to Catholic ideology, this bit of bread is transformed by the priest. The priest carries out a miracle every Sunday, and before it's bread, and afterwards it is the body of Jesus Christ. Now this is pure Catholic. I knew all this when I was a kid, and Calvin said, no, it's only a symbol. Now, this was a very, very dangerous thing to say at the time, yeah? It says, it's not real, it's only a symbol. This idea of the bread being transformed into the body of Jesus Christ is called transubstantiation. Transubstantiation. Now, this is the idea of transformation, yeah? And this was very, very important to people. And now, let me just give you a little idea why it's important. Because if the priest, every Sunday, performs a miracle, then obviously the priest and the church and the pope are extremely important institutions. If the priest every Sunday does something symbolic, the priest and the church are not so important. Yeah? So it's really this idea of Calvin's is really, in a way, a democratic idea, because anybody can do something symbolic. Yeah, but only a priest. Only a very, very important person can carry out a miracle where the bread is really transformed. Yeah? And so it seems like a detail, but in fact it's a clash between the most important thing is the church on the Catholic side, and on the Protestant side, the Calvinist side, the most important thing is God and you. Individual relationship with God. That the centre of Protestantism, the individual relationship with God, which, although it may sound to us, if you're not religious, this may sound like a detail, but in fact it's tremendously democratic as an idea. Every individual can talk to God, and God will listen to every individual. Yeah, not the priest, and then the bishop, and then the archbishop, and so on and so forth. And this is reflected in many other Protestant ideas. For example, the priests. If the priests are only doing symbolic things and they're not so important, then it's okay if they get married. It's not a big problem if they get married. It's not a big problem if they dress just like everybody else. These are all Protestant ideas, yeah? It's not necessary to have so many special things about them. And finally, extremely important, the question of the Bible. The question of the Bible itself. Most Protestants say the most important thing is the Bible. And so, very quickly, some Protestants will say, look at the Bible. Look at these different sacraments of the church. They're not in the Bible. Confession, that's not in the Bible. We only want to keep the sacraments which are in the Bible, baptism and marriage. And the others, they are invented by the church, and so they are not so important. And so the Protestants will say the Bible is central, and we want the Bible not in Latin. We want the Bible in a language which everybody can read, or everybody can understand when it is read to them. Extremely important, because of course if the Bible is in Latin, only the priest can explain to you what it means, because you don't speak Latin, and the priest does. If the Bible is in English, in England, or French, in France, then it is available to everybody. And this is the same idea, individual access to God. Okay, so that's the general situation of religion and the church. And at this, in this moment of religious crisis, a political crisis in Britain will meet the religious crisis, and the result will be a Protestant country. So what is the political crisis in Britain? The political crisis is Henry VIII. Vous savez celui qui a six femmes et trucide la moitié. Yeah, that's the one. Henry VIII, he needs a male heir. He needs a son. He doesn't have a son. And so he wants a divorce. And the Pope says no. Now, this is very surprising, because normally the Pope would say, oh, a divorce, okay. Very frequently. It was not the first time. But there was already conflict in England between the church and the aristocracy, because the church didn't pay any taxes, because the church was unfair competition. And so the Pope and the King of England did not have very good terms, and the Pope refused to give Henry a divorce, and so Henry hesitated for a long time. Yeah, before declaring, okay, not the Pope, is the head of the church in England. I am the Pope, not me. The King Henry VIII declared, I am the head of the church in England. This was very, very radical, and he hesitated for a long time. He said, oh, well, the Pope has always been the head of the church. Is it possible to do this? Will the aristocracy follow me? Will I just find myself ejected, and will there be a big revolt against me? But finally he decided, with the act of supremacy, to declare Henry VIII is the head of the church in England. Notice I say the church in England and not the church of England. That's later. Henry VIII was not a Protestant. Henry VIII wanted the same church but with a different boss. That was the end of it. However, once he made this change, inside the church, all those people who were traditional Catholics were unhappy with the king. And inside the church, the people who were happy were the reformers. And so, without wanting to, Henry VIII encouraged the Protestants. That is to say, the people who wanted big reforms inside the church. Because inside the Catholic Church before, there were lots and lots of debates about reforms which were necessary or not necessary and so on. And so, to stabilise his new independent church, Henry VIII was obliged to rely on people who wanted much more change than he did. Here we have Henry VIII. This is Hampton Court Palace. It's very beautiful. This was his favourite palace. You can go, but I went there last summer just to take the photograph for you. There he is, Henry. Yeah, always a rather. There's a wonderful film called La Vie Privée de Henri VIII, a silent film. Yeah. He ate at McDonald's too much. Okay, and there he is again with some of his family. When Henry died, the new king, Edward, was very young. And he was surrounded by advisors, the conseillers, advisors, who were very firmly Protestants. And who said, well, Henry began something interesting with having an independent church, but we want an independent Protestant church. This was rather difficult because nobody really agreed. There was lots of different opinions. And so the solution was to write the Book of Common Prayer. The Book of Common Prayer is a very simple idea. It's a book of prayers, and in every church, every Sunday, they must use that book and no other book. Yeah, so it's a control and national control of what religion is possible. And this was imposed under Edward. Edward, it's quite let me do so, I'm not the Pluto, see, I'll see you now, but it was imposed under Edward. And under Edward, the church in England really became fundamentally the Church of England, a Protestant church. And this book is still used today. It's still used today in the Church of England, most of it. And so that's very notable. It wasn't easy. There were people who were against this idea. There were a lot of Catholics around. However, under Henry VIII, under Henry VIII, there were a series of changes. First of all, Henry VIII wanted some of the church's money. And so he decided to dissolve the monasteries. Tous les monastères were dissous. And all the money went to the king. This was a lot of money. The monasteries were very, very rich places, full of gold, really. Okay? They also had a lot of land. And so Henry VIII took the land. You know, there were economic reasons for the Reformation, not only religious reasons. He took the land and he gave it in the traditional way. He gave it to his friends. Yeah, so his friends became more powerful. And so he had a whole section of the aristocracy who were going to support Protestantism, because if Catholicism came back, they would lose their land. So those are very, very important elements. And there were revolts against Henry VIII, defending the old Catholic way of doing things. One of the most important revolts was called the Pilgrimage of Grace. Donc, mot à mot, le pèlerinage de la grâce, vous le trouverez sur Wikipedia. The Pilgrimage of Grace, which is a revolt against Henry VIII because he dissolved the monasteries. So it's a continual struggle, but under Edward, it will go much further. It will go much further. However, Edward does not live for very long, and when he dies, his half sister becomes queen. Mary becomes queen, and Mary is a Catholic. Okay, so there is hesitation in the royal family. Some of them are Protestants. Henry VIII was not really a Protestant. Edward was a Protestant. Mary was a Catholic, and Mary said, no, we want to go back to Catholicism. We want the old system back. And so she worked very hard on this. But it's difficult. Even when you are queen, you cannot do anything you want. Yeah? Or you could have a revolt on your hands. And so what did Mary do? She said to the parliament, to the aristocracy, says, I want you to support me. We will re-establish links with Rome. However, you can keep the land you got from the church. Very, very important. She's not stupid. She could not say, all the land which has been taken from the church must have it back. Because there would have been a revolt. Yeah. And so, very pragmatic. Yeah, queens have to be pragmatic. If ever you are queen, remember to be pragmatic. So, Mary will re-establish Catholicism, but will not change the economic taking of land and money from the church. She will also try to frighten the Protestants, and one of the ways of frightening Protestants is by burning them alive. Yeah, you know, for example, if you have a group of students and you don't want them to cheat in their exams, if you take one cheat and you burn them alive, then the others are much more careful for the following exam. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so similar thing. And here is one of the most famous, Thomas Cranmer. And what happened to him is he was a Protestant, and they arrested him. He was very famous. He was very, very well known. They arrested him, and they tortured him. And he said, okay, I sign it. I agree. The Pope is wonderful. I agree. I sign it. Yeah, please stop burning my private parts, etc. You know, and this is—it's really—it's not a joke. It really was like that. And the Queen was very happy, and the Queen's friends were very happy, and they said, "What we're going to do? We're going to execute you. But first of all, we want you to announce in the Cathedral of Oxford that you agree that the Pope is the true leader, the true descendant of Saint Peter, because they wanted a public show. They wanted to show here is this man who was a Protestant, and he must die for that, but before he dies, he will declare to you that the Pope is the true descendant of St. Peter. Donc c'est politique, c'est un procès, comment on dit ça en français, un procès spectacle, hein? Yeah? And they wanted to do it. They didn't want to kill him secretly. They wanted everyone to see. However, it was a disaster for Mary, because when he arrived at the cathedral, he spoke and he said, "No, I have changed my mind. The Pope is the Antichrist." Même aujourd'hui, si vous mettez dans les journaux le pape c'est l'antichrist, il y aurait des gens qui ne sont pas contents. À l'époque, c'était... Mais il était déjà condamné à mort, il n'avait rien à perdre. And then he said, "This is the hand which I used to sign these lies which said that the Pope was the true descendant. I want my hand to burn before the rest of my body." Yeah. Yeah, okay. So he was burnt, and this was part of the process. Now, Mary was not the only person to execute her opponents. Elizabeth also. But Mary, of course, was the Catholic, and the Catholics lost. And so we always say, "Bloody Mary." Parce que ce sont the people who... history is written by the winners. Yeah. So she was not necessarily more bloody than the others, but she lost. So, you know, history is written by the winners. When that's another crapner. It's the same guy. You do fait sortir davantage. When Mary died, Elizabeth came to the throne, and Elizabeth was luckier, first of all, because she lived much, much longer, and where Edward was king for 6 years, Mary was king for 5 years. And Elizabeth was Elizabeth was queen for 45 years, yeah, very, very long time. And Elizabeth was able to stabilise a Protestant church in England. How did she do this? A lot of compromises. So she reintroduced the Book of Common Prayer, but some of the most controversial questions she hid. For example, in the Book of Common Prayer, under Elizabeth, vous n'êtes pas obligé de croire que c'est un symbole, ni que c'est un miracle. Il y a une formulation qui cache cette question. Yeah? Because it was a compromise, yes? She continued to persecute people. Sometimes she executed a few Catholics. Sometimes she executed a few extreme Protestants who wanted more change. Yeah? Yeah, but it was a sort of middle ground, the Church of England. Now, I was brought up in a Catholic family, and when we were at school, well, I went to a Catholic school, a public school, but a Catholic school, and they told us the story of all the wonderful Catholic men who were executed by Elizabeth. And here is one of them, Edmund Campion, the martyrs, the Catholic martyrs under Elizabeth. And they gave us songs to sing at the Catholic school, and the songs were, "I would be very happy to be a martyr like those martyrs." Really, I'm not joking. We were actually singing this. We say, "Oh, qu'est-ce que ce serait doux mon destin si je pourrais mourir pour toi comme sont morts les martyrs." Yeah, moi j'étais pas sûr de vouloir, mais bon. So Edmund Campion, I think I've got one more. That's later. Okay, so Elizabeth, over 45 years, so it's much more a much longer period, manages to stabilise a Protestant church. But this is also a period when the economy and the world is changing very, very quickly. This is the period when you have, for example, the very first colonies in America. This is the period when you have much more trade with the East Indies, with Indonesia, the spice trade, and so on. It's a very, very dynamic economic period, in some ways, the Protestant church was more flexible for the new economy than the old traditional Catholic church. But of course, even Elizabeth died eventually. After 45 years, she also died. And she was replaced by James I. When James I came to power, everybody was very excited. The Catholics thought, oh, maybe the new king will be nicer to Catholics, will be softer on Catholics. And the more extreme Protestants, we call them Puritans. The Puritans are just the Protestants who want a lot of reform and not a bit of reform. Yeah? And the Puritans are, oh, well, we hope that the king will be more Protestant. And so the Protestants, for example, they wrote a petition, the Puritans, they wrote a petition, says, we want changes in the church. For example, we want to abolish everything which is not in the Bible. For example, the wedding ring. There is no wedding rings in the Bible. It's an invention, a later invention. And so the Puritans said, no wedding rings in church ceremonies of marriage because only the Bible is important. Yeah. That was just one example. Yeah, they lost. Yeah. You can see I still have a wedding ring. And James did not. James was quite pragmatic. He didn't make any big changes, but he did make one big change. He authorized a new translation of the Bible into English. And so the Church of England, little by little, under Elizabeth already, but finally under James, had completely transformed the idea of working in Latin and wanted to work in English. A very, very important transformation. And so one of the most important things about the Book of Common Prayer is that it's in English, which is extremely surprising at the time. So this establishment of the Church of England. Things are happening in the rest of Europe at the same time. The Bible is translated into Czech. The Bible is translated into Welsh or Galois, also at this period. Okay, now, we're going to move on to... This is 1603, ici sans toi. This is 1603 when James comes to the throne. And just 45 years later, there will be a civil war. And this is the second theme for today, the civil war. Civil wars are always fairly serious things, you know, not a lot of fun. I think groups always hesitate for a long time before organising a civil war because civil wars are very, very dangerous things to organise. Much more dangerous than normal wars because you have to divide the whole country up. What is going to lead to the civil war? Well, both a political crisis and a religious crisis. The political crisis is about how much power for the king and how much power for the parliament. Remember, of course, the parliament is not democratic. It only represents very rich people. The King James I will continue to use more power than the parliament wants him to use. So inside the parliament, there are people who agree with the king and a lot of people who criticise the king. Unfortunately for the parliament, if the king is not happy, he can just dissolve the parliament. Perhaps you remember in the French Revolution, this was a question. Yeah, that the king dissolved the parliament, and finally the parliament refused to be dissolved. Yeah, and that's how it worked in France. In Britain, it worked like that. There was a whole period where there was no parliament, but then the king was obliged to call parliament again because he needed money with the taxes and so on. So there was a rise of a tendency to absolutism, a tendency to absolute power of the monarch, like in France at the time. Not today, quite good. Okay. This mapped onto the religious differences because most people thought, oh, well, Catholicism means religion and society, like in France. So for most people, being a Catholic and wanting total power for the hierarchy and for the king were very close together. So when you have the conflicts between the Catholics and the Protestants in England, it's also a conflict between the idea of traditional absolute monarchy and the idea of a constitutional monarchy. James is replaced by Charles I, who again will try to rule without Parliament. Secondly, will be much more generous to Catholics. There are still a minority of Catholics in Britain at this time, still a minority. And Charles will make life easier for Catholics and refuse to repress them. The conflict between Charles and Parliament, this is between 1625 and 1649, very slowly gets stronger and stronger. And finally, the king decides to arrest the five most ferocious critics. And he arrives personally with his soldiers. He arrives in the parliament and he says, I want to arrest these people. And they have disappeared, of course. They're not stupid. They're not there. Okay. He goes away and the parliament votes, we want an armed guard outside parliament all the time. So the parliament decides that they want soldiers in front of the parliament to defend parliament from the king. This is the beginning of a situation of civil war, huh? Because if you're the parliament, in theory, the job of the parliament is to advise the king. Now they are saying, we need soldiers in front of the parliament to defend ourselves against the king. Yeah. For a while, they tried to get a compromise. It was not possible. Charles went up to Oxford and said, everybody who wants to fight for the king, come to Oxford. And Parliament said, hey, everybody who wants to fight for Parliament, come to London. And you have the Civil War. Now, the Civil War is... I think I already said some of this, but I'll say it again. It's impossible to be neutral in a civil war. Because, you know, the one army comes to your town, well, you have to help them or not, or fight them. You know, you can't really be neutral. And so the war goes on, and there are two most important elements about the war. First of all, suddenly, there is no king. This is extremely shocking to people. There is no king. And for a lot of Puritans and dissidents, the more radical people say, if there is no king, everything is possible. So this is why sometimes when we talk about the English Civil War, we sometimes say the English Revolution. Because everything appears to be possible. And suddenly there are a lot of documents, pamphlets saying, this is the best way to have a new society. This is the best way to have a new religion. Very, very radical ideas. And there are 100 small religious groups, or religious groups of a few hundred or a few thousand people, who want to discuss what kind of new society we want. Sometimes in the history books we say sects, but that's probably not the best word today, because they are a little like political parties, really. Because remember, at the time, if you have a radical new idea for society, well, you form a new religion. This is the normal thing to do. This is what religion is at the time. Here is one of them. Yeah, then we have... Here is a drawing from the time of one of the most radical sects or political parties, the Diggers, who were led by Gerard Winstanley, and there's one of his quotations at the top. England is not a free people till the poor that have no land have a free allowance to dig and labour the commons. That is to say that it's impossible to be free if you have no land. Now, this is kind of obvious in a way, because if you cannot eat, how can you be free? Yeah? But this is very radical. So it said, and the Diggers said, you know, if you have no land, take the land. Take the land. There's lots of land. Just take it. And they did. And of course, they were eventually defeated. A very radical sort of communist idea at the time. And Gerard Winstanley also said, you know, what is true religion? Yeah, true religion is the land for the people. Yeah. Okay. So the elite did not like this. But one of the reasons that all these ideas came up is that the parliamentary side began to realise, and mostly Oliver Cromwell realised, that if they wanted to defeat the king, they needed to mobilise the whole people. They needed people to be enthusiastic. And if you say to ordinary poor peasants, say, so, well, this king isn't very good. Let's come and fight and risk your life to try to get a new king. Okay, maybe, yeah. And so they were obliged to say to the people, we are going to build a completely new society. There will be respect for poor people and for ordinary people. And so this built up a new kind of army, a very political army, called the New Model Army. And it was an incredible army. It was, after a while, they began to elect their own officers. Les officiers étaient élus par les soldats. Today in the army, that doesn't exist in any army today. This was a very, very radical army. And at the end of the Civil War, when the king was defeated, the army, the parliament said, "Thank you, army, please go home now." And the army said, "Ah, no, we were building a new society, do you remember?" Yeah. And so the New Model Army became, in fact, a political party, really the nearest thing for the time for a political party, and continued to oblige the parliaments to do things more radical than he thought. Because inside the parliaments, even during the Civil War, a lot of the parliament were looking for a compromise with the king. Or perhaps a new king. But the radicals made sure that this didn't happen. In 1649, Charles was executed, and England became a republic. They didn't use the word republic, they used the word commonwealth, richesse commune. But England became a republic, and it remained a republic for 11 years. Now, it doesn't sound very long, but it was very impressive at the time, and all over Europe, you said, there is a country there without a big traditional monarchy which has been destroyed. This is very exciting. However, it was very difficult to stabilise a new constitution. And in 11 years, there were three new constitutions. Yeah, it was such an unstable situation. Oliver Cromwell was the head of state, and they kept changing the organisation of the state. But nevertheless, throughout the whole period, there was a great advantage given to radical Protestants and also to a more modern economy. Yeah, a more modern economy. And so it was all about, you know, the merchant classes became much more important, trade became much more important, so that this change, the religious reformation, plugged into a political crisis, gave rise to the Civil War, for which the Civil War was for political, religious, and economic reasons. Comme souvent, quand on parle des guerres religieuses, ils sont jamais seulement pour la religion. Ça marche pas comme ça. And so you have the result with the English Republic and Oliver Cromwell. This is the progress of the Civil War. This is not really a very interesting map, but it's the only one I could find. Of course, the green part is the parliaments, and the red part is the king, controlled by the king. And you can see, little by little, the Greens win, but we knew that. Notice, where does the support for Parliament come from? London is for Parliament. London is the big centre of the merchants, the trade. Yeah. So it's the most modern classes which are for Parliament. Charles gets his support from Oxford, from the landowners, the country landowners, but they are getting less important. This is another political group at the time called the Levellers. On dit en français les niveleurs. And in fact, the levelers, avant que c'était un groupe de rock. Yeah. In fact, the levelers, they were called the levelers. Le critique disait, ah oui, vous voulez que tout le monde soit au même niveau. So that's why they called them the levelers. It was an insult. And the levelers said, oh, yeah, not such a bad idea. So in fact, the levelers were Democrats. But at the time, to be a Democrat was a crazy, revolutionary, radical idea. You know, everybody is intelligent. Yeah, that's impossible. It appeared to be impossible. It was absolutely radical. And during the Civil War, there were also a lot of movements of, quite a lot of movements of women saying, yeah, women are important in politics too. Yeah, we are intelligent. We want to talk about what kind of new society. This was very, very shocking. But it was possible because everything was changing. And so there were women saying, hey, if everything is changing, yeah, we want a better situation as well. And so during the Civil War, you got all these demands. With the levelers wanted universal suffrage. They wanted everybody to vote. This was absolutely shocking. And all these ideas come up. But after the restoration of the monarchy, these ideas will disappear for 150 years. Yeah, the ideas of democracy will disappear for 150 years until the 19th century, when, of course, society has changed completely. That's a pamphlet, c'est une brochure, il y en avait des centaines, des brochures of the levelers. This is that's from the Civil War. Oliver Cromwell. The same one again. Yes, okay. The soldiers of Oliver Cromwell. We call them Roundheads. This is not a real photograph. They are people pretend. They are actors. Okay. There's another picture of the digger, Jared Winstanley. That's another, document produced by the levellers. And they would go round from village to village reading it to people. Say, oh yes, come and meet us on Saturday night after your work. We want to tell you about the new society. Oliver Cromwell. Because the Republic did not manage to stabilise a new constitution, when Oliver Cromwell died, it was not clear who was going to be the next head of state. For a while, Oliver's son, Richard, became the head of state, but fundamentally he didn't want to do it, which does not help. And very rapidly there was a severe political crisis. And one section of the parliament said, we need to bring back the king. And they wrote a letter to the son of the executed king and said, please come back. And he came back. But it was carefully negotiated. First of all, James wrote the Declaration of Breda, B-R-E-D-A, and the Declaration of Breda, just stay with us, just a few more minutes. The Declaration of Breda is very simple. It says, I will come back, and I will not punish people who were against the king in the Civil War. Yeah? So it was an amnesty, a declaration of amnesty. Extremely important, because of course otherwise the Civil War would have begun again. And so he did, and in 1660 the monarchy was restored, the restoration. We have a king again, but, and I already quoted this, but I'll quote it again, as one historian said, what is written by the sword cannot be taken away by the pen. That is to say that you have a king again, but the situation is completely different. The king comes back with much less power, the parliament has much more power, and this is the end of the possibility of absolute monarchy in Britain. Although you have a king executed in 1649, and his son comes back to the throne in 1660, it's in a completely different situation. Yeah? The Civil War has changed so many things that very quickly James will accept more control by parliaments. And indeed, 28 years later, when his brother, James II, becomes king, who is Catholic, he is rapidly eliminated without a civil war. In 1688, the parliament decides, we don't like this king. They write to another king, William, please come over and be our king. Yeah, there is no civil war. There is a very small mercenary army of soldiers who are paid to come over. The parliament is now boss and will be boss forever. Yeah? The king, this is the end of the high level of royal power in Britain. Now that's important because one of the reasons that Britain still has a monarchy today is because the monarchy accepted that they would not have very much power. Yeah. So there was a compromise. So there was a big fight, execution, restoration on a compromise. And that's made it possible. Certainly, I think if the monarchy had not understood that the situation was completely changed, then we would be even already today in a republican situation in Britain. Okay, that's 150 years in 55 minutes, but that's all for today. Next week, the Industrial Revolution and the Empire. Thank you for listening.